Why would you not wear pants if things are biting things that are wiggling around?
Welcome to Super True Stories. We suffer through and report back on the worst and weirdest documentaries you can stream. I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt. And Dave, does this count as catfishing you?
Oh, it might. We watched Okie Noodling, a film by Bradley Beasley, and he talks about how some of his favorite memories were growing up with his family fishing, but he fished with a rod, not with his hand.
I feel like we need to explain what noodling is. Ideally, our listeners already know what Okies are, but in case you don't, it's someone from Oklahoma. Noodling is the art of catching a fish using your hands as bait.
Yeah, and art is somewhat in quotation marks, I think.
It's a interesting way to approach fishing.
Yeah, Bradley says that when he met his noodling cousins when he was 14, they told him all about fishing with his hands, and they showed him scars on their arms from where the fish had bit them, and Bradley became fascinated by this, and as an adult, he decided he was going to learn more about these noodlers.
I definitely want to know more about what drives a person to go into the water, find a hole, wiggle their fingers around, and then have a 45-pound catfish bite their fingers so that you can drag it up out of the water.
Well, you get 55 minutes of that. I don't know if you're really going to be satisfied by this, but we do certainly explore the topic and the noodlers.
We do.
One of them says that part of the problem is that all of these noodlers will talk all day with other noodlers, but they're very protective of where they go to do their noodling.
I love the word noodling.
Yeah, we're going to use it a lot because it amuses me. Bradley describes them as a handful of brave men still practicing the lost art.
Truly, though, at first you kind of want to roll your eyes like, how brave are you? You can die noodling. People have died noodling.
Yes, but it kind of seems like sort of a Darwin Award sort of thing if you're dying from noodling.
It kind of does.
You're not doing something truly essential or necessary for living.
Not in an era post the invention of the rod and reel.
No.
We don't need to wrestle our fish anymore. I would argue that maybe we never did need to wrestle our fish.
None of this seems right to me.
No. Well, we're introduced to an Oklahoma game warden named Shane Hodgins. He explains the legal definition of noodling, which is you're fishing using your hands only. Any sort of spear or hook or anything is illegal.
Yes.
But that said, fishing with your hands only is only legal in Oklahoma, Louisiana, Tennessee, and Mississippi, which is A, precisely where you would expect it to be legal, and B, super weird. Like, why would a state outlaw fishing with your hands?
It sounds like some people are doing it the improper way, which is they're using things like scuba tanks and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know why noodling by itself, if you're truly just following the rules as the game warden describes them, would be a problem.
Even if you're in Minnesota and you have a scuba tank and you're down in some hole wiggling your fingers in the muck and a fish bites it and you drag the fish out of the water, why is that not a legal activity?
It feels like one of those things where like nobody would actually arrest you if you were really determined to do that. But I guess potentially you could get fined if you got caught.
Are there like popo under the water with scuba tanks just waiting for people to go stick their hand in and wiggle them around and then they grab your hand?
I'm kind of amused about this idea of like law enforcement where you're like wiggling your finger and then you get like a handcuff put on instead.
Right. I think that this is how I'm now going to proceed believing anti-noodling laws work.
Yes. We meet author Burkhard Bilger, who wrote the book Noodling for Flatheads, and he says that noodling is like cockfighting. It's something that's going on all the time, but nobody really talks about it.
I did not know that there is a catfish species known as flatheads, so I sort of assumed that he was calling the people who do the noodling flatheads. So I read it as noodling for flatheads. Flatheads who want to noodle.
There's another weird thing that we have to talk about kind of up front, because about 3 minutes in, we get this cartoon about what hand fishing is.
Yes.
Hand fishing. It's a fun way for father and son to cool off in the hot summer months.
In addition to what you hear, you also need to understand what it's showing you. There's a cartoon illustration of a man with a hat and a pipe standing in the water with a very wary looking boy next to him. The older man has his arm around the boy, and then it pans down and you see from behind that they're both naked.
This was a creative choice that is truly baffling.
And then it continues.
Our noodlers wade along the shore in search of catfish nests and holes. Then once found, the noodler wiggles his digits and to entice the catfish into chomping its sandpaper-like teeth right down into the fisherman's flesh. Now that's some god doggone good noodling.
I would think that given that you are trying to entice a fish to bite the thing that you're wiggling, you would want to be wearing some sort of pant.
There's that, and then there's also the whole, like, it appears to involve a man and an underage boy naked in a river.
Yes.
I just don't know.
It's the only illustration we get in the whole documentary, which on its own is kind of weird, but it really makes it look like it's something that a normal person is not going to do.
It sets an expectation, and for me, it set the expectation that every time I saw a new person who I had not yet seen in this documentary, I kind of was checking out to see whether or not he had any pants on.
Again, why would you not wear pants if things are biting things that are wiggling around?
None of this seems like safe nude activity.
No, it doesn't.
Bradley is looking for people who are noodlers so that he can get them in this documentary, and he's having some struggle, and he asks some guy who's, I think, at a bait shop or something if he noodles, and the guy says, it's not my favorite thing to do, and Bradley asks why not, and the guy says, because I can afford a fishing pole now.
Which I think is very legitimate.
There are definitely Walmarts where these people live. You can get a fishing pole for pretty cheap.
Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace.
I would use a stick and twine over what these guys are doing.
I would starve. Honestly.
Well, he strikes gold because he meets Red and his nephew David. They're the first noodlers he meets that are willing to take him fishing. They like to go in lakes, so the water is much clearer than where we'll see some of these other guys doing this. But David's got a son. He wants to teach him. David says that he hopes his kid doesn't grow up to be interested in sports because that would eat into his noodling time.
He talks about how, like, I've heard that sports have practices and stuff.
Right?
I don't want to do that. And I felt like, same. I get you, David.
Yeah, but you're not saying that because you want to be standing in water wiggling your fingers at a catfish.
I certainly do not.
We meet David's wife, Tina, whose face is a very different color from her neck.
I had that exact same note.
It's like she looks like she was trying to put on makeup to be on camera, but it looks more like she was putting on makeup to go to a kabuki theater audition, because her face is like many shades whiter than her neck.
Yes.
And we learn a little further in that Tina's not a huge fan of this because of the danger element involved, but Red says that noodling is something that just comes natural to you, like playing the piano without really being taught.
I guess it's sort of like a muscle memory type of thing. And so I kind of get what he's saying. If you do something enough, you're just super good at it and you don't have to think about it anymore.
Sure, I get that. I just think it's weird that this is your thing, but...
Well, as they're talking to David, they have some B-roll of him with his hand underwater with a massive catfish with his entire hand in the catfish's mouth. And I just don't get the appeal of that.
These things are routinely, it looks like, 40 to 50 pounds. And David says that he's hoping to land one that's more like 70 pounds.
At one point, they pull up a catfish that looks to be roughly the size of the first shark that they land in Jaws. It is gigantic. It's from head to tail about half the length of a grown adult man's body, if not longer. And the heads are as wide as a man's torso.
Yeah, these things are huge.
One of the wives of one of the people who's interviewed is like, I'm not even swimming in that water. And as much as I love swimming in a lake, I kind of feel her.
Yeah, we cut back to Burkhard briefly because he's talking about the history of all of this. And he says that the first account he could find of noodling was from 1775. He says that the word he uses is Indians would wrap a cloth around their forearm and then go in the water and basically noodle. So they were smarter in 1775.
Yeah, I noticed that too, because you're protecting your arm in 1775. We've stopped protecting our arms.
Mm-hmm. We get a chunk where the documentary takes some pains to go into the profession of these guys.
One of the things that they talk about when they're talking about their careers is that they all of these men use their hands in their careers. So they talk about using their hands and how important that is to them. Why then would you have a fish bite your hands?
That is exactly where I was going with this. Okay, I get like, I like to use my hands, so I like to use my hands fishing, but my vocation is dependent on my hands, so maybe I should protect them?
I mean, I guess we're sort of putting the city slicker view on having a fish bite your hand, because you probably aren't in any real danger of the catfish biting your hand off, but they're getting scraped up like crazy. Somebody talks about how someone was once bit up multiple times by a beaver that they accidentally caught instead.
Yeah.
And somebody later, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, gets bitten multiple times by venomous snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, it can be very fun to reel in a fish.
Oh, I think it's Jerry says that you have to turn into an animal yourself when you're noodling. And noodlers are hunters. They hunt for a living.
And Jerry, when he goes noodling, did this jump out at you? He goes noodling fully clothed. Sneakers, socks, shoes, shirt, belt, the whole nine yards.
Do you think Jerry is a rare never nude noodler?
Oh, the two proclivities intersect in the Venn diagram.
See, yeah, because like I'm a never noodler.
Yes.
But I think Jerry's a never nude noodler.
Well, it certainly seems that way because he's fully, fully clothed. Which, honestly, if you have these things biting you, I would want to be too.
I didn't notice it when we were watching it, but I kind of ride for Jerry now. Except, Jerry talks about how he has this incredible knack for noodling and he catches more fish than any other guys he knows. And he says,
for some reason, I seem to have a knack for catching more than they do. And I think it's, I don't know what it is, but the fish, I don't know if they trust me or what.
They do not.
Jerry, the fish do not trust you.
No. He says that he's going to noodle until he dies if that's not what kills him.
This was a really good segue on Bradley's part, because then we get an interview with another noodler who has a friend who drowned noodling.
Yeah.
They noodled underneath like a collapsed section of highway, and he got wedged under a portion of it and was found like 5 hours later.
I think it might be Jerry says that he's been in kind of a similar circumstance where you're reaching around and going under these collapsed roadways and you can get pinched and get stuck under there. And so he says that he would have just pulled his arm off.
Right. Like it's easy. Don't you think that the person who drowned was trying to get out from under and would have torn his arm off if that were possible?
Well, Jerry says that he had a quest. It was me or the fish. No matter what the dangers are, I went in and I caught the fish.
During this segment where he's talking about his heroics in terms of risking death to catch a fish, we meet his wife, Missy, who says she has had to go in and rescue him before.
Mm-hmm.
One, I'm glad he has a spotter. But two, what if your wife can't get to you in time? It doesn't take that long to drown.
Jerry actually started getting some notoriety for all of this.
Yes, national fame.
Jerry's been on David Letterman, and we see some footage of him trying to get Letterman to touch a catfish, and Dave is having none of it. Jerry says that he left the fame and attention behind him because it was keeping him from actually going out and noodling.
A couple things. First off, the fish gets noodled, right? I'm assuming that's how they catch the fish to be able to take it to Dave Letterman's show.
Uh-huh.
The fish gets noodled, and then they put the fish in this tank on the David Letterman show, and the fish gets noodled again.
Fish is having a band run amok.
Fish, if you see fingers wiggling, stop.
Yeah. How did you get into this mess?
Right. And what in nature resembles fingers wiggling that is actual food for the catfish?
Worms?
That's some big worms.
Maybe that's why it works, because the catfish is like, holy fuck, look at that worm.
And then he falls for it again.
And again and again.
This is the Fish Darwin Awards. You would think by the time a catfish got to be like 40 pounds, it would be smart enough to not go for fingers.
Like, how did it manage to live this long?
Another thing that comes out about Jerry is that he practices noodling in the winter underneath the ice.
Yeah.
He goes into a tank in his yard that's iced over and swims underneath the ice and then breaks through, you know, some yards later.
It also looks like he like kind of is poking around inside what looks to be more like a beaver dam.
He's around a lot of beaver dams.
They cut from these little clips of his videos back to Lee, who says that Jerry is crazy and unsafe.
Half the stuff what he says is bull. That's just like out here. There's beavers here. That hole over there, it went up and started going in there. Back out, get out of there. No fish that I know of lives above water. I don't think he's smart. I know you guys have videoed him. That's fine. Believe you me, I wouldn't even go and run the camera for him.
I kind of am one with Lee in this portion.
Yeah, I liked Lee here.
We meet Lee's dad at this point. His name is Art. When he first comes on screen, and I thought to myself, oh, this guy's like in his late 70s. He is 62.
Mm-hmm.
Noodling is a hard life.
He's been noodling since he was 18. Art and his son Lee go out with Lee's son Justin. So you got three generations of hand fishermen.
The fish that they're catching are gigantic, prehistoric, like they're pulling small dinosaurs out of the water.
Catfish are really ugly.
Oh, God, yeah.
And their heads are huge and wide and kind of flat. If you don't know what a catfish looks like, you should Google it, but not after dark, because these things are nightmarish.
Throughout this documentary, the only people we meet who are noodlers are male.
Mm-hmm.
And we have both Lee's wife and Art's wife who say that they tried to help one time, and they were using their feet to block a hole so that the catfish couldn't get out past them. And the catfish basically touched their leg, and they were like, nope.
Yeah.
Not doing this.
They were done. The wives are definite hard pass. I ride for them too.
Then we go back to Red and David.
Yes.
And Red is showing off a wound on his ankle that he got from trying to catch a fish with his foot. His foot.
Well, I mean, think about it. You go from having 10 things that you can wiggle at the fish to 20 if you can use your toes.
Then David catches a fish. And he has the filmmaker come try to help him. And it was amusing because the filmmaker is a city slicker. And he's like, come up on my right. And the filmmaker goes on his left.
He's like, no, no, my right.
Right. Even then, Bradley seems confused. But he pulls the fish out with both hands. And oh my God.
It's a 40-pound fish.
And it is 0% happy.
No, it's wiggling and bucking and splashing.
That kind of does look fun.
Fighting with something like that?
It is fun to wrestle our dog.
I guess. Bradley decides that he's going to organize and try to find someone to host the first annual Okie Noodlin' Tournament. They end up with about 40 people or so.
Yeah.
And they've got a day to do as much noodling as they can, and then they're going to have a weigh-in at 7:30 and see who wins.
As they're advertising this, they go to a bait shop and ask if they can put up a sign. And I was thinking, wait, but aren't fingers bait? And then I was thinking, do not go to that bait shop.
No.
That bait shop is full of fingers. And the bait shop guy is the one who talks about how he knows someone who got bit up by a beaver.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly never thought that a beaver attack is something that you could experience. Like, it's never seemed like something that would be possible.
Yeah. But apparently, in murky water that you can't really see, you could have a beaver floating around down there and you could be jamming your hand down a beaver's throat instead of a catfish.
And beavers have quite the large chompers.
They do.
Of all the mammals and aquatic mammals, the beaver would be the least likely one that I would want to tussle with.
No, you gotta figure like those things would latch on pretty good. And it kind of their whole shtick is using their teeth.
They're very sharp and pointy and strong. See, also chewing down trees.
Yeah. It's not just beavers. It's also, as you mentioned earlier, snakes. Going up to this tournament, Jerry has been bit He says that he's been bit 4 times by rattlesnakes because he used to hunt them, and once by a copperhead. It sounds like this bite was the copperhead bite.
And they have video footage of him basically hassling a snake.
Yes.
We have a friend named John who hassles snakes very frequently. That's sort of like his shtick too.
The only time that we've ever seen an actual copperhead, though, in our vicinity with him, he was very cautious.
We were hiking, and he said to me, "Jamie, stand up very slowly." And I stood up, and he said there was a copperhead less than 3 feet from you. He was like, if you had gotten bit, you would have been dead before we got you back to the parking lot, which was probably an exaggeration. But I do feel like Jerry needs to show a little more respect to snakes. I don't know. He had to be hospitalized.
Yeah.
And his wife was like, well, I knew he could take it.
And despite that, he does try to compete in this tournament. And I don't know if you noticed, but he has wrapped his wounds in duct tape.
Yes.
And he's out in a dirty kind of creek trying to hand fish to get an entry in this tournament.
Fully clothed.
Oh, go right to that!
Jerry says that he thinks there's going to be tanks that are going to be used by certified divers, which is against the law. And then it immediately cuts to David, who's getting a scuba tank ready. And he says, I was told I could do this because it's in the state regulations. You can use scuba gear to grab fish.
I was like, oh my God, Jerry and Lee are going to be so mad when they see this documentary.
Right?
That is totally cheating because the tank lets you just stay underwater for 20 minutes.
Well, it also lets you, like, go deeper.
Get into places you wouldn't be able to.
Right, because you don't have to worry about being able to get out of them.
Reduce your risk of getting caught and dying, so you might go into a riskier space. It was cheating.
We get to the weigh-in.
Welcome to Oklahoma's first catfish noodling tournament. Are these some exciting fish here? Man.
Honestly, they're gigantic prehistoric creatures, so yes.
I guess.
Is this more or less exciting to watch than skipping stones?
Oh.
I mean, the skipping stones you're watching for like maybe 10 minutes, and it's a feat that you've probably attempted and that you'll be like, whoa, I didn't even know that was possible. But these fish are kind of crazy to look at.
They look more like monsters than like fish.
Yes.
If God didn't make this fish, Stephen King would have had to make this fish.
They're truly horror creatures.
Well, David gets a 44-pounder. A guy named Tim catches a 54-pound catfish, and someone else ends up catching a fish that same weight. So they tie. The guys who don't win seem to have a bit of misgiving about it. Jerry says that he's glad that some guys came along and proved him wrong, that he was the best noodler. He says that he's glad because that means there's a whole breed out there of me.
Yeah.
And Red says that he's thinking about retiring. Now, you expressed some shock and awe when we learned that Art was 62.
Yes.
But Red, who I also thought was probably pushing 70, Red at the end, when he's talking about retiring, says he's nearly 55 years old.
I missed that. What?
Uh-huh.
I would have thought that David, his nephew, was nearing 55 years old.
Nope.
This is a lie.
Well, the water's getting colder. You know, I'm nearly 55 years old. And, you know, you get that old arthritis creeps up on you. And like I say, the water gets colder. And, you know, your joints kind of ache and hurt more. And old fish beat you up a little more.
I'm speechless. Wow. Red's like 15 years younger than I thought he was.
It ends with the narrator, Bradley, coming back and saying,
"What began as a bizarre fascination with the folklore of hand fishing somehow became a familiar understanding with the waters and the people where I come from. Like Uncle Red told us, when you get bit, you either want nothing to do with it, or it's in your blood. I'm afraid it's in my blood."
So what this documentary really is about then is one man's descent into madness. Because if you, Bradley, could step away and watch the documentary without having gone through the process of filming and creating the documentary, you would not see this as an endorsement of this activity.
No, you would not. Oh. So, did you learn anything?
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
I learned Oklahoma is not okay. It is really not okay.
I don't know if you noticed, but there was a news segment talking about the tournament. It appeared to be a recurring news segment called, Is This a Great State or What?
I did notice that. I had forgotten about that, but yes. And the answer is no.
No, it's not great at all.
Did you learn anything?
I learned mainstream fishermen have a dim view of noodling.
Mm-hmm.
Their argument is that a fish makes a choice to bite a lure. Noodlers are depriving the fish of its free will.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's their beef. You're depriving the fish of its free will by wiggling your fingers and tricking it into biting you and then wrestling it out of the water. How is that different from putting bait on a hook and the fish bites it and you wrestle it out of the water? I hope you don't hunt.
Yeah.
Because a deer's not like, hey, can you shoot me, please? Thank you. I was looking forward to that.
Right. I guess we learned more than I thought we were going to as we were watching this. I thought we were just going to learn, well, here's a thing to avoid.
Well, I think that we did. All of these other things we learned, I think, fall into subcategories under the heading things to avoid.
Yeah. Like Oklahoma.
I'm not rushing out to noodle anytime soon.
You know, maybe it's because it's so close to canoodle.
Canoodling is greater than noodling.
Yes.
Other things that are great are reviews left by you, our dear listeners. Wherever you pick up your podcast, we would love it if you would give us a rating and tell your friends about us. We'd also love it if you connected with us on social media. We're available on Twitter at Super2Story. And on Facebook at Super2StoreEase. And you'll see some fellow fans engaging in some conversations around our shows.
Yes, we would love to engage with you as well. And we should also thank Tomb Dragomir. He is the creator of our theme song, which is Mexicana Massacre off of his album Instrumental Psycho Synth. And if you're looking for additional podcasts to check out, we highly recommend our friends over at the Projection Booth and 6 Foot Plus.
Absolutely. I want to give a shout out to two listeners in particular who are always engaging with us. And that is Taru, who is from Finland, and Brian, who I don't know where you're from, but thank you for listening.
Yes, thanks for listening and thanks for chatting with us. It's always fun to engage with listeners and make new friends. So on that note, until next time, I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now that's some god doggone good noodling.